microwaved coffee.
So I watched that Britney Spears documentary thing.
Oh yeah, I was gonna ask you about that.
Dude, that shit is dark.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny because I watch stuff about serial killers all the time. And this, like, really bothered me. Like, I wanted to turn it off halfway because I was, like, cringing a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I know she's, like, a rich person, but it's still, like, really sad. Like, really, really, really fucking sad. And it's, like, I can't believe it got to this point.
Yeah.
I can't believe it went. Yeah, and it's
like, even her family. Like, her family, instead of helping her with her mental health stuff, like,
yeah,
they just took control.
And yeah. In the show, they interview her first manager, who I think was like really high up at Jive Records.
Oh, what?
So she, yeah, the woman who first signed her. Not like,
No.
Her, whoever the person who like first signed her was, I forgot her name.
Yeah.
But that woman was like really high up, and she was like, she met Britney Spears when she was like, I don't know, like 14, 15 or something like that, and like loved her. And then they asked her about her dad, and she's like, the first thing he said to me was, my daughter's gonna be rich and buy me a boat. And she's like, so that's what I have to say about her father. Like, she was like, that guy's a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah, apparently,
like, he's
awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've read that he, yeah.
Yeah,
I
and,
can't believe like the judges.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I can't believe it went through so many people that are in our fucking judicial system who were like, yeah, this is okay. And like, what's even sadder is that she knew it was gonna happen, because I don't know. It's not like, I don't know her. It's not like confirmed or whatever. But I'm pretty sure she does have mental issues, which, by the way, probably all stem from paparazzi media. I mean, it's all like, all her issues I'm pretty sure are from like the trauma of being followed around 24/7 by cameras. But she, it was really sad because she, like, she's in some right state of mind. Like, she can, she's smart and can think for herself, because she even said when she was talking to lawyers when they first started the conservatorship or whatever that's called, she said, look, I'm not going to win this. I know they're going to put me under it. That's fine. I will accept that. But she was like, anybody but my father. She said, anybody but my father. And they gave it to her dad.
Yeah.
Like, and they explained in the documentary, they're like, it could literally be a bank. Like, you can leave your conservator, your, like, the person in charge could be a bank if you wanted them to. And she said, literally anybody but my dad. And they gave it to her fucking dad. And it's like, yeah. Oh my God. Damn. It's pretty insane. But
it's so crazy.
Yeah. And it's kind of like cringy. I mean, we lived through it. So, you know, like through the whole paparazzi thing with her fame, and like kind of grew up with her. But like, yeah, you just cringe watching interviews because you're like, I can't believe that was okay. The things that they would ask her, and like the way they sexualized her, and you're like, oh, she's a teenager. That's fucking weird. Like, so bad. But yeah, it's just it was really good. It was really well made, I think. And it's pretty up to date. The last information they had on the documentary was from November, like this November.
Now all the fans are like harassing Justin Timberlake. Have you read about that?
Yeah.
Dude, look. I remember saying this to Kyle like five, six years ago, because he keeps showing up on like SNL. And like, I will admit I have a biased opinion because I'm Backstreet Boys all the way, fucking sing. I don't like them. But I'm like, what is America's obsession with this fucking guy? Like, I was like, I don't get it. When he was like always in those SNL skits, I was like, why is everybody fucking obsessed with this guy? Like, he's not, I don't know, I just don't get it. Like, I was like, I don't think he's funny. I don't think, like, the skits that he was in were funny because comedians wrote them. But I was like, I don't know. I just don't get our obsession with this guy. And then I saw the documentary and I was like, oh yeah, fuck Justin Timberlake. I was right. I was right the whole time. Yeah, but yeah, that was pretty, I did see that people are like now Well, it wasn't just that, like, they also brought up, like, the whole thing with, they do clarify, like, they're like, it wouldn't be acceptable now. None of those things would be acceptable now. So mm-hmm. I guess that's a good thing. Yeah, they brought up with the whole Justin Timberlake thing, like, they brought up the Janet Jackson performance, too. And they were like, oh, nothing seems to be this guy's fault, no matter what he does.
Yeah.
Well, she even said it was her idea, Janet Jackson.
No, but they did an interview with her a few years later where she claims that she was forced to say that. Okay. Like they asked her about the apology. They were like, what? Cause somebody asked, I think it was like in an Oprah interview. Somebody asked her, like, they were like, why did you apologize? And she was like, and she had asked, like, they told her that she had to apologize. And she's like, I didn't do anything. Like, why, what am I apologizing for? Like, I didn't do anything. But
I mean, I don't think it's a big deal. I think people overreacted, but
I think so too. It's a boob. Like, get over it. It's like,
and it was covered for the most part. Like, who cares?
I was watching it live and we didn't see anything.
Yeah, we didn't see anything either.
We were like,
mostly everyone was like, did that just happen?
Yeah. Like, did we, we think we saw something, but we didn't. Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. It's depressing. Like, make sure you're in, like, a good mood when you watch it. But it's
like, yeah. Well, yeah, I can't watch it anyway, but
oh yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. And then I'm right now, I'm taking a class, like, the class that I had this morning is Culture in the Media, and it's really interesting. Like, it's giving me, like, a lot of material to talk about in class next time. But because they were talking about social media and how much it changed things. And they were saying, you know, she's under such a close eye that she can't do anything. But on social media, she has to put stuff out, because if she doesn't, then fans are automatically like, oh my God, she's being held against her will. And so they were like, and they can't do too many stagey things because people suspect that too. So what happened was that this whole thing started, like, this whole thing of us knowing about the conservatorship, it all started because these two women made a podcast, and I think it's called, like, Britney's Instagram or something like that, and jokingly were like, hey, what if we did a podcast where we overanalyzed all her posts? And they were like, yeah, okay. And so they did it, like, in a joking manner, like, obviously they're overanalyzing these posts or whatever. But then it was like, is she trying to send messages through her
phones? They started believing their own thing.
They started believing their own, like, jokey thing. And they were like, wait, is she trying to, like, actually communicate with people to, like, help me, you know, through this thing? So then this guy calls, and he calls into the podcast, and he leaves them, like, he calls their number and he leaves them a message and says that he can't say who he is because he's somehow involved, but he basically confirmed everything.
They're right.
Yeah.
So it started as, like, a conspiracy theory where everybody was just like, oh, Britney fans are just overanalyzing anything. And then it was like, oh, holy shit, this is actually happening. Like, this is real. And then the lawyer, there is, so if I understood this right, her dad hired a lawyer to keep this going. Basically, he's been her conservator for 12 years now.
Yeah, a long time.
A long time. And so he hired a lawyer to keep this going. Now, here's what's unfair. Because he is taking her money, she is paying for his lawyer.
Oh.
So, like, she can't win in this. Yeah. You know what I mean? So the dad hires this lawyer. From my understanding, the guy hires this lawyer and tells him what's going on. And the lawyer says, this is not the situation for a person like her. He's like, this is for people who cannot live a normal life on their own. And that is not her. Like, he's like, I don't see any sign on here that she is incapable. Like, they were like, conservatorships go for people who are, like, in their 90s, who can't cook for themselves, who can't do anything. And they were like, she's a young lady with a lot of money So I don't see what the problem is. So the dad got pissed and I guess fired him because he was like, no, this is not the situation we should be in. And he kept, I think he had worked with her for a little bit and then stopped working for her. And then when it was allowed to be brought back again, so when they were able to have another, like, another trial to like review it, basically, he, without anybody's prompting, signed a petition for it. So like, she didn't ask him to do it. Nobody asked him to do it. He was just like, this isn't right, so I'm going to petition it for her.
Mm-hmm.
So like, this guy did it on like his own free will and was like, yeah. And so that is when it was confirmed that the conservatorship, because he made it public, like he made the petition public.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so this guy just like is the one that opened it back up. And
dang,
yeah, it's nuts, it's crazy. I don't know how they're gonna get past it now, like the judges and the people who are gonna be, I don't know how they're gonna get past it now, because it's just too out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
To where you know, there's like public pressure. Like, I just don't think that the next time they, you know, they'll be able to do this, they'll be able to keep the dad. So what happened in November, the last update, was that in November they went to trial, or they went to court and took away his, oh my gosh, what did they do? They took away, I think, his control over her, or the dad, or the money from her. But he's still the conservator. Like, he still can do, he's still the conservator in one piece of it, but not the other, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. So the judge basically took the dad's power away from the last trial in November.
Oh, really? I thought he was still in control.
So, like, he's still technically, like, listed at it, but he no longer, I don't think, has financial control.
Oh, well, that's good.
She ended up giving the financial control to a bank, which is crazy to me that you can just,
yeah.
Like,
so she's like, boned. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And like, she's really smart, because when she finally had it, it was at the time when they announced her residency in Vegas. And so she saw that she wasn't going to be able to beat the conservatorship.
Mm-hmm.
So she was like, as long as my dad has control, I'm not going to work. So she stopped working. And so what happened was that she showed up for the opening of her residency, said hi to people, and then left.
Mm-hmm.
Like, didn't mm-hmm. perform, and then canceled it right after that.
Yeah, she so canceled, yeah.
It's like the only power she has. It's the only way she can screw these people over. Is just like, well, I'm not going to work. You can't make me work. Like, yeah. I mean, especially if you're like claiming I'm insane.
So now nobody has money.
Yeah, pretty
much. That's what I thought too. I was like, if she's crazy, or if she's like unstable, how is she performing?
Yeah, she's still performing. She's not like she's not like on stage, clearly on drugs. She's not like, she doesn't look like she's struggling. You know what I mean? Like, she's fine. Yeah, she's fine. Yeah. It's just, yeah, I had never even heard that word, like conservatorship, until this podcast. I was like, what the heck? Like, that's so crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah. Anyways.
It's Brittany Bitch. That, we haven't really...
Yeah, Brittany Bitch.
Yeah. I haven't really done anything. Well, I've been in school now. Okay, so being an adult and going to school, a lot harder than I thought.
Oh, really? Well, you're taking very hard classes.
I'm taking 4 classes, and I'm also trying to do things, because... Yeah, you know, things have to get done.
Yeah, you still that's the hard part. It's like, you still have to be an adult.
Life.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it'll be fine. It's just, I need to get into like a groove. It was just the first week, so
mm-hmm.
I think I'll be fine. Yeah, I was like, I basically didn't do anything, because we had to, some last week, I don't know if you guys remember, like the water, something was wrong with the water.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to go to laundromat, and so that was Thursday. So Wednesday, I studied all day to turn something in that was due Thursday. Thursday, we left, like, I didn't work, and we basically went to the laundromat, and I kind of studied there a little bit. And then Friday, I studied all day, and then Saturday, I studied all day, and then Sunday morning, I studied so that I wouldn't have to be studying during the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Dang.
And then yesterday, all I did was study. And then today, I didn't study. So tomorrow, all day, I'm going to have to study.
Yeah. Well, and then plus you're working.
Yeah.
Like, there's just a lot you have to do.
Yeah, it'll be fine. It'll be worth it.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully. No, definitely, definitely.
But yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
This is microwave coffee. Wait. Am I right?
Yeah.
I guess. Dude, I'm losing it.
Is that microwave coffee? Is that our podcast?
And I'm Ivan Ortega.
And I'm Kishan Sandy.
And I'm Justin Park.
I don't know why we didn't do this one a little bit earlier, and I didn't see any podcasts about this because of Queen's Gambit. I was like, I kind of want to play chess, but so I downloaded a couple apps that like kind of train you and teach you like moves and things like that. And I was like, how did chess start? So I started to look it up. Nice. And so this is about kind of like the origin of chess, which is interesting, but also not like crazy in depth. It kind of makes sense once it gets started.
Mm-hmm. You're right. That is crazy that there aren't like a ton of podcasts about this. Yeah.
And actually, I was going to look it up, but I kind of ran out of time. Not ran out of time, but I started doing other things because the computer is distracting, which is another hard thing about having all online classes. And Kijan showing me TikTok also didn't help. How many things did I bombard? I've like sent you so many things already.
I'm getting a minimum from you and Vanessa of 5 videos a day. Like minimum. Yeah, yeah. It's great. I love it.
So if you remember, I couldn't send, well, I don't know if I said this last time, but anyway, I couldn't send messages because TikTok forces
your number
to use your phone number. Yeah. And I guess someone had opened an account under my number, which I thought was weird because how did they verify it?
Yeah.
I don't know how they did it. But anyway, TikTok doesn't allow you to just close an account. And they also only allow you to use one phone number per account. So it's not like Instagram where you can make a bunch of accounts or whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, I couldn't figure it out since I started. It's been like 2 weeks and I couldn't figure out. And I was like, I got this loophole. Went online, went to Google Voice, created a number, logged in. And then, well, obviously I didn't know the password to the other TikTok. So I used my phone number to send me a code.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I verified the code and it let me in. There was nothing in it. I switched the number to the Google Voice number and it sent me a text to Google Voice, verified that.
Nice.
Closed that account, added my number to my account. Mm-hmm. And then I proceeded to bombard Kishan with.
They're great though.
Nice, dude.
But yeah, so loophole in case people are running, because apparently it's like a big issue and I didn't find a website that said to do this, and all the websites would basically just like copy and paste the TikTok support, which is basically telling you can't have more than one account to a number. And I'm like, that's not helpful.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, create a fake number through a like voice over IP thing online that accepts SMS, switch that number, and then add your number to your real account. Anyway,
that's crazy. It's
dumb. But yeah, so anyway, chessboards are no longer sold out. On Amazon. So I guess everyone who wanted one got one or got bored of it watching the show.
They were like, oh, it turns out it's only fun watching the show.
Yeah. I want to buy one that like folds, that has the pieces inside, because I have one that they make out of like stone, like in Mexico, that my mom bought me from Mexico City like years ago. Not Mexico City. They went to the little town my dad's from. I think it's called like Villa Corona, and my mom bought me because I like playing chess when I was little, but I was never like really good because I would just play by myself. But yeah, so anyway, I was looking them up just to see if I could. I was like, I kind of want one
that
like
folds stock
and like can like store the pieces, and I want to learn how to play like well, just to stimulate the mind, you know.
Yeah, do something productive.
Yeah. So anyway, back to chess. There is no like known person that created chess. First known like traces of what we know as chess was from 550 AD. This was in like northwestern India.
Oh, India.
Yeah, India during the Gupta Empire. No idea what that is, but that's what was around during that time. There is a legend, like a story that people tell, that there was an Indian king, Shahram, and a wise man in his kingdom. Basically, the wise man kind of created the game to show the king that all the people that were beneath him were important. And that's like how the story goes. So the king needs his queen, needs his rooks, needs his bishops, needs his knights, and needs his pawns for his kingdom to work.
Oh, interesting.
So then the king took this and basically, since he thought it was a good lesson, then he wanted all his people to learn. Then the story kind of takes a turn where like the king wants to pay the wise man and the wise man doesn't want to take money, but he wants to take rice. And I guess rice was like kind of expensive. And the king was like, well, how much rice? And he tells him as much rice that fits on the board. And I guess it was like a big board that he made. So then the king got upset or whatever. But anyway, the main part of the story is that it was like to teach him a lesson. The game that he introduced wasn't really chess. So that's why it's a legend, because I think rooks, like some of these pieces weren't involved in that game, and it was called Chaturanga, which translates to the four divisions, meaning infantry, cavalry, elephantry, and chariotry, which is like, that makes more sense for what they use, you know, like in India they used to use elephants to fight and stuff like that. So that is like the earliest traces of that. But then some people think that the game evolved from a Chinese game from 200 BC.
Okay, could I just say,
what?
I was truly shocked when you said India, because I was like, wow, it's not China. Like, well, I immediately assumed it was going to be China.
Well, I'll tell you right now, it was during the Chinese Warring State period, which I guess it was like when they were trying to like conquer whatever. Mm-hmm. And the name of the game that they played was called Chang Chi.
Okay.
And it translates to elephant game. There's also kind of like a legend that goes with this one, that the game was invented by a commander named Han Qin, who invented the game to represent a battle that he was in. They both kind of revolve around the same thing, but like a lot of stuff I read about the Chinese game, it didn't play like chess. So it was, but that's kind what of I was gonna similar, ask you. But it didn't. That's why a lot of people believe that it started in India, because the game in India played more like chess.
More like it.
So I guess the checkerboard thing was kind of common a long time ago to play different games. That's how like that other, like the Japanese game Go started, and like all those like other, like a bunch of games started with checkered boards. So anyway, the game spread to Persia, I think Iran ish area now, around 600 AD. During that, the reason they know that they played a version of chess was because there's a manuscript describing a game like chess around that time. Then the Arabs conquered Persia, so then Muslims took to playing chess, but they called it shatranj. I guess shah, which is shah, means king, so that's why shatranj, like the game. I don't know what it actually, I couldn't find like what that full name translated to, but then shah was like a thing that people yelled when they were threatening the king. And then shahmat, which is basically means the king is finished, which is kind of like saying checkmate. Started around that time, and then that became like a tradition, so people who learned the game after that started doing that as well. So from Persia to Muslims to Spain after that, because the Moorish conquested that area. So then they learned chess and took it back to Spain, southern Spain, to be exact. And then around 900 AD, they had like the first Muslim chess masters. I'm probably gonna butcher these names, because I don't know.
Yeah, they're very hard to say.
Asuli and Al-Lajlaj. They wrote like manuscripts on techniques for chess. So they're considered kind of like the early masters. Yeah. So and then after that, like in the 9th century, it started to become popular all around Europe. So it started with like Spain. And like the more I read about it, it basically every time someone conquered someone else that was playing chess, they would take to playing chess. so it was like, you know, the Moros conquered, you know, part of like the Middle East and like all that area. And so they started playing chess, and then they went to go conquer more people. And then they started, so like Portugal and then France and, you know, places in Russia. And so, yeah. So then, yeah, by 1000 AD, it was like basically all of Europe was playing chess. The Moros in the 10th century had a book that described the game backgammon, dice, and satranj in a manuscript called Libro de los Juegos, which means the Book of Games. So basically, they were really into it, into playing like games. So around the same time, Buddhist pilgrims would travel through the Silk Road trades, which I think it was like a trade, like a road that would lead from like the like east, like China, to Europe. And so they started to learn chess from Europe, and then they would take the games back to the east, which basically kind of going back to China and actually playing like what we know as chess, not like their game as chess. And they would also play like on the roads, like when they would stop to sleep or whatever, so people would play. So it's kind of funny because I feel like chess hasn't like changed all that much. Like old, like people still play like at parks, you know. It's like a game that like you just play anywhere.
Yeah.
And I guess they've always been doing this. So it's like,
yeah, because I mean, even cool. The game is like portable.
Yeah.
Itself. It's not that hard to carry around.
And it, yeah, like it's pretty simple to set up. Like everything besides the actual playing is like pretty simple. Mm-hmm. Like you can basically make it up with rocks and like dirt. Like you can make
your own grid. Exactly. And
it's like pretty simple. So in early chess moves, obviously Shah, like we mentioned, is king. They called another piece Furzan, which was it would move one square diagonal. The field, it would move two squares diagonal. It couldn't do less. It had to be two, but could jump over one piece. This is like it would fill, its individual field could move to only 8 squares on the board, and no field could ever attack another field. So it's like one of the rules. They also had a horse, which is the same, and a knight, a rook, but we call it rook. I know that sounds the same, but I tried to pronounce it different. They used to spell it R-U-K-H, but I think in order to make it more European, they spell it R-O-O-K for rook. But they basically didn't change that one. And then the pawn would move one square, not two. The two thing started like way later, like in 19 something, I think. But yeah, so the rules didn't change much. I think you couldn't. Well, anyway, I'll get back to that. There was a book about chess by a guy named Luis de Lucena. He wrote a book in 1496, which is the only printed work that survived like completely. Mm-hmm. So it's like the oldest book that we have that is complete. Like there's pieces of other literature about chess, which is why they think it's like 550 AD that the game started. But yeah, so that's like the only book that we have that's like full. In 1512, Damiano, that's like, I didn't find a last name or anything. He published another book, and I'm not going to say it. Because it's Italian. All right, I'll try.
hold up your fingers. Hold up your fingers in a little pinch while you're doing it. Maybe it'll help you.
Questo libro è da imparare giocare a scacchi. That's as close as it's going to get. And I didn't find a scacchi. I know means chess because I saw it somewhere else. Basically, it's a book about chess. A guy wrote it in Rome, and England and Germany received like a reformed game in 1530. After that, the old style of plane was basically dead in Europe, and they were picking up this new way of playing, which is more of what of like how we play chess now. But in India, they were still playing with the old rules. This is kind of like how chess got a little bit complicated. Basically, it's kind of like everything, like when we're kids. I mean, I don't know if like younger people now will relate, because I don't know how many games they play outside. But basically, everyone has their own rules that you learn from someone, because the game is word of mouth. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no like organization that says these are the rules. So like people have their own rules of how to play. And in Europe, like in England and Germany, they played a certain way, which kind of got picked up by most Europeans. But in India, they're still playing with the old rules. And I'm sure, like, you know, in the East, they were playing like something else because it was word of mouth. So like it's like telephone. Like, I'm sure people changed a little bit, which is why these books were kind of important, because people that were really into chess would read these books and be like, okay, these are the rules, you know?
Yeah.
But like anything that's fun and like tasty and, you know, great for life, chess and dice games were periodically banned by kings and religious leaders. For example, King Louis the Ninth forbade the game in France in 1254, basically because it was like a social thing, like social status. You know, chess set was often associated with wealth, knowledge, and power. So because it was associated with wealth, knowledge, and power, King Henry I, King Henry II, King John, King Richard I, Alfonso X, which is was a king in Spain. I think they wrote him as Alfonso the Wise. I'd never heard of that guy before. And then Ivan the Terrible in Russia all loved the game because it was like a status symbol. So they allowed it. But a lot of like churches and stuff like that didn't want you to play the game for whatever reason. It's like, yeah. I don't know. All they did was war back in the day, and it's a game about war. So I don't understand.
Yeah, isn't it crazy when you think about, yeah, like they'd have a heart attack if they saw, man, what we were doing now.
Yeah,
we're like imagine fucking doing Molly and like
the random people dancing on TikTok.
Yeah,
like you're swiping sometime, and I'm like, why is there no dislike button?
There's like, a dislike button. I hate this.
Yeah, I was like, why can't I tell them that I don't want this? Like, just like three people doing dance moves choreographed, and I'm like, that's not what I want from this.
Oh, try being in school when you're 34 and everyone else in your class is 19
and they're dancing on TikTok
and asked me to join one of their dances, and I was like, I will not do that for several reasons. I was like, one, I'm not making a fool out of myself on TikTok, and I'm like, two, you don't want me in your video? Like, I was like, I'm old as fuck. Like, yeah. I'm gonna ruin your video. Like, I was like, no. Oh.
Ruin your video.
Yeah, I'm like, no, you don't want that.
So then I have like a bunch of things, because like, if you really, I got the most of the information from Wikipedia, obviously, and then Britannica.com, and then iChess.com. If you really are interested in like the detailed version of this, go to the Britannica version of chess. They go into like names and just like super detail of like moves that changed and things like that. So I'm not going to bore you with me just repeating these things, but there's like a specific dates that I thought, I found these on Wikipedia, and some of them, like most of them, right, I thought were cool. So like in the 1600s, obviously, there was the first professional player writer. In 1780, the first Masters game to be recorded was played. Basically, they got like a bunch of people that were known to be really good to play each other, which, I mean, if you're into something, that's like nerding out, you know, like,
yeah.
It's like, oh my god, these people are playing each other. But in 1836, the first chess magazine was printed. In 1849, the first U.S. chess tournament. In 1866, the first match to be timed by a clock was played. If you like remember the Queen's Gambit, how they like time everything Yeah. So anyway, and then in 1883, the tournament to use specially designed chess clocks was played. And in 1927, the first chess Olympiad that was by the, they call it FIDE organizers. So that's like the NFL or the FIFA of chess. The FIDE, but the French call it the FIDE. And then in 1960, the numerical ratings of players became standard. There's a few other cool things. So like the last major change in the rules, it took longer to win like acceptance from like the chess community. The chess community was like kind of weird. Some people were like super sticklers of like not changing things, and some people like wanted to move forward and like change things and standardize things. And basically how they determined how rules were made was once they started competing in tournaments, and like the person who was like unofficially claimed as like the world champion, that person had most say on how the rules were made. So the first major international event was a series of six matches held in 1834 between the leading French and British players. So Louis-Charles de la Bourdonnais was from Paris, and Alexander McDonnell, not McDonald.
McDonald.
He was from London, and then Bourdonnais ended up winning. So he basically got to change a lot of the rules or set a lot of the rules that were followed at the time. And he died in 1840, so like only a few years after. But he was the first person to ever win money in a tournament. So he won £100.
Wow.
Yeah, by beating some guy named Staunton. Staunton then became the champion. And he started to make rules called the Staunton Pattern, which I guess are some set of rules that chess people know about.
Yeah, I was going to say, not us.
I'm not going to go into detail with that, because like you can go into so many tangents, and I was trying to like focus on like how it moved forward. So then Carl Ernst Adolf Anderson was a German school teacher, and he went to one of the first tournaments in London. He was inspired by Bourdonnais like winning to go to London, and he won the London tournament. That nice. Event in London then inspired Americans to organize the first national championship. So then basically in the US, they organized the first like US champion, or the first type of like country champion, like, you know. They didn't have that like in Europe. Like there wasn't like a, you know, England champion or a Spanish champion. Like, so because the U.S. did that, they also made the first American Chess Congress in New York in 1857. That caused like some little boom in like people wanting to play chess. And they made it, the first national champion was Paul Morphy of New Orleans. So then around that time also, which was not around that time, actually, like later in 1924, 15 countries met in Paris to make a permanent international chess federation, which is known as the FIDE. It's the French acronym for, I had to look this up, and let me see if I still have it so I can hear it, because I do not know how to pronounce that last word. So it means Fédération International de Échecs. Échecs. I don't know. Something like that. Basically means International Federation of Chess. Mm-hmm. So that's like the organization that basically runs all the stuff now. Yeah. So then they are the organizer. They, because of that, they started like the junior players, the women's championship, the men's. They set up everything from now on. In the beginning, though, there was this guy named Alexander Alekhine. He was like the first Russian champion, and he did not want to accept the FIDE as like rules. So there was like when he won a tournament, there is like kind of like these arguments, and the FIDE try to come and like settle the score, you know, try to be like the fair person that were going to determine the rule or like what was going to happen because people were arguing. And Alexander Alekhine like basically was like, don't listen to them, you know, listen to me because I'm the world champion. Like,
yeah,
what I say goes. But anyway, that didn't. So basically that happened until he died into 1946. After that, people started to recognize the Federation as like the main thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's kind of how we know chess now. They set the rules. The rules haven't really changed since like the 20s, I think, was the last time they set a rule. Yeah, and there isn't like a whole lot of like archaeological pieces found. There's like certain rules on how they determine it's a chess piece, and there has to be more than one object. So if they find like one, you know, knight, they don't consider it a chess piece. Huh. It's really weird. It has to be like two, and they have to be like different pieces. Like you can't find two knights.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really weird. There is like one where they have everything. So they think that the Vikings carried the game for all the way to Iceland. So they went Iceland, England, and they're responsible for like the most famous collection of the chess. There's 78 walrus ivory pieces that were found in the Isle of Louis in Outer Hebrides in 1831 that date back to the 11th and 12th century.
Wow.
Yeah. So that it's pretty cool. I mean, they don't look like they're in the best shape, but it's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah. And then a lot of the pieces that they find are in the Silk Road that I mentioned. I don't know if you guys remember that from school, like where they would trade from west to east or whatever. But yeah, so they find a lot of pieces along that place and in India. But yeah, that is chess. Again, thanks to Wiki and Britannica.com and iChess.com. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that is. It's interesting that there's games like that that just have not changed.
Mm-hmm.
And that have kind of like survived every generation because it's, you know, we always are looking to like update stuff.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that we've left those.
Update a little bit, but like from what they were saying, like, and from reading the rules, like it didn't change that much. Like the things that were changed were because people found loopholes or things in the rules that they were just like, okay, well, we got to change that because that it's not working out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's been played for so long that I mean it's a pretty solid game now. I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thousands of years.
did you find anything about that that one chess move where the pawn can go sideways and eat it?
Oh no, I didn't see that.
So I think it's called the en passant or whatever.
Oh. But okay, I mean, I also skipped a lot of like the things that describe like actual moves because I was like, there's so many like it. Yeah. If you go to the Britannica page, I thought I was done at one point reading. And then when I got to the bottom, like scrolling, it loaded more things.
Jeez.
Oh, God.
So I mean, even like they even had like machines that played like pretty early on, like I think it was like before 1900, they had things that would like move pieces to so that people would learn how to play or like try moves and things like that. And then obviously with AI and like the 90s, I think they started like playing versus computers and things like that. So yeah, it's pretty long, like the Britannica one. I just kind of picked out like certain things and then I was like, all right, I kind of have to stop or else I'm gonna have to do like a two-part.
Yeah,
but yeah, so yeah, no, I didn't read like moves, but I'm sure it's in here somewhere. I wonder if it's really like long,
just a bunch of moves that like no one really knows about.
Yeah, there's like, I mean, there's books on just moves.
Yeah,
it's crazy. I just want like one of those like wooden like foldable ones.
Yeah, yeah, that's mine. Mine has the, it's like the fold kind where
yours is so pretty.
It's so cool. I'm so bummed though. It's missing like three pieces, but
no, really?
Yeah. Yeah, there's I'm missing a knight.
Oh, that sucks.
And one king? No, queen. One queen.
Dang, that's
yeah, it's been through a lot. I mean, it like yeah. traveled from Iraq, so it's got like some chips and stuff, but it's yeah, not but too I mean, bad. I'm just missing character. Like a couple. Yeah, 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 exactly.
Yeah, some of them are like really. I mean, I would like a really pretty one if I ever learn how to play well, but like some of them are really like expensive.
Yeah.
And I remember the prices going up when Queen's Gambit was popular.
When it came out.
Yeah, I was like, what the hell?
You're like, this game has been around for hundreds of years, yeah. and you are now deciding
to like raise a price for like yeah. this cheap one that's like normally like less than $20.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, I might buy one. not like a crazy expensive one, but there's some that like have like foam underneath so that the pieces don't move. You know, like yes, the
that's what I have
as like the shape of the pieces. Oh yeah, yeah. yeah. And then yeah. like that's pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah. That way it doesn't like scratch the board if it's like a wooden board.
Yeah.
Or it makes that very satisfying thud instead of a
yeah
when you place it.
Uh huh.
Yeah, I also want one that has like the numbers so that I
get used to can that.
Memorize. Yeah, like the you know.
I used to have those foldable magnet ones, like a lot of them.
Like A4.
I told Kyle when I brought the chess set home from my parents' house. I told Kyle, I was like, "Oh, we're gonna start playing." And he started laughing because he just pictured us like Phoebe and Joey when they were playing. And then she was like, chess. Like, she, instead of calling out like checkmate, she was like, chess, and she yeah. didn't do anything.
Uno.
Well, anyways. Yeah. Cool. That was very interesting. Anyway, where can they find us?
Find us on Instagram at Microwave Coffee Podcast or email us at microwavecoffeepodcast@gmail.com. Okay, guys. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah. Bye. See you guys next week. Bye.
Could I get some more coffee?